Hello folks, welcome to another exciting edition of Lindsay Lane Discuss on behalf of Passion Palace. Today we are talking about Frank Albach at Tate Britain.
We are indeed, and what an amazing man he is. To think that he was born in 1931, still painting to this very day, well into his 80s. I find that awfully inspiring.
Oh, it is, absolutely. Just to give a little bit of background to Albach, yes, you're right, he was born on the 29th of April in Berlin in 1931. He was a refugee from the Nazis, taken in by the British. He arrived in Britain in 1939 at the age of 8, but there is tragedy early on in his life, is that his parents were both murdered in a concentration camp, so it's very sort of sad, really. How would you describe his style, Lindsay? Frank Albach's style, do you want to elaborate on that?
No, definitely. Very, very bold, very, very thick, strong brushstrokes. He used a well-known technique known as impasto, which meant laying the oil paint very thickly and gloopily on the canvas or board surface.
Exactly. One of the things that was certainly prominent in Albach's work generally is the thickness of the paint. It's very gestural in the brushstrokes. It's very direct. It's very colourful, and there's lots of scraping as well. You know, he builds up the layers over time. It has the appearance of being quite, directly created or perhaps in a day. But in fact, Albach spends months and months on a particular painting till he's happy and satisfied with it. Wouldn't you say, Lindsay? Is that okay?
No, most definitely. No, that's very true. Yes. No, but particularly when I went to the show with you, I was very much drawn into the colourful landscape and portrait pictures of his work. I just really like the strong, bold colours, the fiery reds and oranges.
That's a very good point. But before we get into greater detail talking about the certain images that we've chosen, I'd like to talk about the technique and the subject matter that Albach uses. Lindsay, do you think he's more of an abstract painter or a figurative painter?
It's very interesting you saying that, because when you look at his work at first glance, it's quite possible a lot of people may think that he's abstract, because it's very hard to pick recognisable images in there. But when I find you walk closer to his works upon closer inspection, you can start to pick out figurative elements.
Exactly. I think when you look at his work at first glance, it is quite abstract. You're seeing a mesh of paint, you're seeing sort of different layers scraped on and added. There's a lot of energy in the brushstrokes. But then when you stand back, the image kind of resolves itself, doesn't it? You know,
it does.
You kind of see a head, if it's a portrait study, you kind of see some kind of landscape evolve from the paint. So it kind of makes pictorial sense when you stand back and look at it. But I think you're right, it has two sensibilities. One, which is, I guess, it touches the figurative side, and the other sensibility being the abstract side. But it's kind of, I believe it's a hybrid of both, a hybrid of figurative work and abstract work.
Yeah, well, one particular painting I was drawn to was the head of William Fever, painted in 2003, so it's very recent, and it's oil on board.
Right.
And I couldn't really work out what it was. From a distance, it looked like a torch, like there was something with a light on top of it. But as I walked closer and closer, I realised it was actually of a head. And I really liked the contrast of the really warm Indian yellows with the very thick, strong black Prussian blue colours.
Yes, it is quite a striking image. Also, what's interesting is that it's betrayed. It's abstract. But it's got a betrayal of some kind of face, but also it's on board as well. Would you like to talk about why he did it on board?
It's quite interesting, because when you see the way he's painted on board, the paint kind of doesn't really hasn't really kind of sunken into the surface like it would on canvas. You can't see any evidence of weave. And he's also done the marbling effect, which you described to me yesterday, where he would scrape away the paint with a palette knife.
That's a very good point, Lindsay, because his process is very robust. And I guess when you're working on board, you can be as robust and tough with the materials and the boards without the fear, I suppose, of ripping into the canvas. But honestly, it must be so hard to lift the amount of paint that he uses, especially on board. I mean, you probably have to have three or four people lifting the piece, I would imagine.
That's very true.
Oh, that's brilliant. So, okay, we're going to talk about another image, a charcoal study by Frank Auerbach called The Head of Catherine Lampert II, 1985, Charcoal and Chalk on Paper, 75.6 times 72.1 centimetre, to be precise. It could be read as Catherine Lampert II, I guess, whichever one you decide, really. But so, Lindsay, do you want to talk about this particular image and what you find fascinating about it?
Well, one could almost be mistaken that it would appear as just as a sketch, but in actual fact, if you've been standing in front of it, A, it's quite big, and B, it seems to have been done in two parts. If you look on the left-hand side, there what seems to be an extra strip of paper that would make up the part of the head that may have been missing at some point, but we don't know why.
Exactly. I think we touched on it in the previous discussion earlier, where we were talking about the sort of the strength in the way he works, you know, the process and how raw it is. And having that strip, it kind of emphasizes the rawness of his technique, doesn't it? You know,
yeah.
It makes it immediate. It's got an energy. And to me, you can see like the faint eraser marks of the charcoal there, because he's building up, even it's a charcoal piece, he's still building up layers and subtracting them, rubbing them out and stuff. So the process is very similar to the paintings. Would you agree on that?
Yeah. I mean, actually, it's interesting what you're saying about the rubbing away marks. That must be obviously used for highlighting certain areas. I just like the very gestural charcoal marks as well. It's obviously done with controlled movements, you know. He knew what he was doing. It wasn't just a random thing.
I think that's very true. And also, what's interesting about this piece is it's monochromatic. There isn't any colour. Do you think that gives his work more of an added power, or do you think it kind of isn't as strong as the paintings? What's your argument on that?
In a way, I know what you mean. When you look at a piece of work that doesn't have colour and is monochromatic, it makes you think more about the subject rather than the way it's painted. But in a way, at the same time, you can't really compare the drawings to the paintings. They're kind of separate, but they work together.
I think that's right, and also that's a good point. And also, the drawings, I think they're more. There's more clarity in the line, it's more clear-cut. And when you look at some of the paintings, as great as they are, sometimes they might feel a bit over-cluttered, like there's too much to see, whereas the drawings, I feel, that they're far more readable, I think. You know, that there's more space around the head, you know, the lines are cleaner, there's more clarity and everything else. So, I mean, when I was there with you, if you remember, I was saying that the drawings were stronger than some of the paintings.
It's an interesting point, because the extremes of light and dark seems stronger, I suppose, especially in the oil painting piece that you have there as well.
Oh, that's a very good point. Thanks, Lindsay. Yep, we have another piece which I'd like to talk about. Bear with me, folks. This is exciting. We're going to talk about the head of JYM2, which was painted in 1984-85, and it's all on canvas, 66 by 61 centimetres. So, Lindsay, what's fascinating about this piece? What stands out for you when you look at this piece?
It's interesting, because when I looked at the painting, I immediately thought of Glenn Brown, because I went to his show and saw paintings done by him. And he, as you know, copied many different styles of artists. And his paintings that look like Auerbach, they kind of appear like they're done quickly, with very thick oil paint, but it's done in a totally different way, every meticulous brush.
So the thin strokes are kind of sort of mimicking the oil. It's like an illusion of thick paint.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, whereas when you look at the real Auerbach, it's done with really... I'm not saying that Glenn Brown isn't confident, but you can see with Auerbach's work, it's raw and earthy and confident, you know?
Very good point. There's another aspect to this work which stands out for me, is the choice of colour. Now, when contrasted against the other paintings in the show, this one is more reduced in colour. It has a more of a monochromatic palette. There's a touch of what looks like Prussian blue on one of the eyes there, but it's very, very muted, wouldn't you say? It's in actual fact, it's very reminiscent of some of the drawings he's done. I find it would have been interesting, in my opinion, had there been more paintings like this, where he reduced the colour to you know, almost black and white, you know, quite muted. What's your opinion on that?
No, most definitely. I mean, even that small that small speck of blue that you see in his eye kind of brings it all together as well, even the little tiny flicker of yellow there, which is on just above the eye.
I mean, it's painted in 1984, so obviously some time ago, but I think most of the paintings in the show were quite, you know, lots of Prussian blue, as you said, you know, cadmium reds and yellows. But this one for me stood out. I think because it didn't scream at me in terms of colour, but it has a quiet presence. It might be because it's the only one of its kind to be quite muted. But I thought it was interesting that it was the only one in the show that was off this palette, really.
I like the choice of colours, but it also brings me on to another painting that kind of caught my eye here.
Ah, right.
And it's actually called In the Studio 4, done in 2013, so it's only a couple of years old, oil on canvas.
Oh, I see, right, so quite recent then.
Yeah, there's like a big predominance of blue in this painting.
It's very Matisse, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Talking about studio, Albach has got the same studio in Camden Town. He moved in there in 1954, and he's still there to this present day. One thing about Frank Albach, guys, is that he is a prolific painter. He paints 365 days a year, you know, and he sleeps in the studio, wakes up and continues working. I mean, he's a great role model to up-and-coming artists, I think, you know. I mean, there's a guy that we should all look up to. All aspiring artists should look up to him. I mean, it's dedication, isn't it, Lindsay? I mean, that's what art is about. I mean, he's so passionate about painting that he lives and breathes it. I mean, this is what I like about him. Mm. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, that's great quality.
No, he's being himself.
Fantastic quality to have, you know, that determination, you know. Every day to go to the studio to paint, it's very sort of, it's got the right attitude, I think.
In the Studio 4, I was kind of trying to work out what the blue frame in the picture is, and there are other things appear to be like a smaller easel in front of the blue frame.
Also, looking at the painting, it seems like it's geometrically designed, you know, there's more order. I mean, if you compare it to some of the other Frank Albert paintings in the show, it has a sense of space. It's got a definite composition to it. It's not as cluttered. It's ordered, isn't it? You've got the table in the foreground.
There's less curvy, wavy lines. It's all very
exactly, because a lot of the lines that he uses are quite sort of jagged, aren't they? Quite raw, jagged, bold lines. But this one is more sort of gently defined in some ways.
I mean, yeah. I'd imagine that when he did the straight lines, he probably would have held a really big, wide brush at arm's length, you know?
Yes, I remember you saying that when we was at the show. That's a good point, yeah. Another thing, Lindsay, I remember when we were there, you were talking about the amount of paint that Frank Albert uses. I mean, you were talking about...
Yes.
He must have a lot of money spending, you know, on these tubes. But I think we found out that he used litres, didn't he? Sort of tins of paint.
Yes. I came across a book of his in the show that in one of the back covers it shows his studio with big pots of oil paint that he must have used to, like, pour the paint on, literally. I mean, one of his paintings would be like a whole lifetime's of work that I do, you know.
Very good point.
Incredible, really. Incredible.
That's true. I mean, when you look at Frank Albert's work, most of his work certainly, his painting style. You look at firstly, you're struck by the texture. The paint itself almost comes out in such relief. It's almost like sculpture, isn't it? I mean,
yes,
it's almost like painted sculpture.
Yeah, relief. That's true.
Isn't it?
2D and 3D, somewhere in between that.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, there's another painting I also particularly like. That's called Hampstead Road High Summer, done in 2010. Again, it's oil on canvas, and I'd say this is probably one of my favourite pieces, particularly because of the fiery reds, the fiery oranges. You can kind of see what looks like a person running for a bus behind a car.
Absolutely.
Maybe with a yellow satchel on his or her back. But again, because I'm saying his or her running for a bus or car, you don't really know. And I kind of like that, you know. You can sort of make out it's a figure in the painting, but you can't really know exactly what is going on. And that's what makes his work quite mysterious. You know?
I absolutely agree. There was one thing that you said. You mentioned the similarity to the graffiti, the sort of urban scene, and this is down to the boldness of the lines. It's got that kind of urban quality. A lot of the street art that you see in Brick Lane, for example. So do you want to talk about that
connection?
I'm
really glad you mentioned that, because I was saying to you that in terms of graffiti art, I can never work out whether they use a big fat marker for the lines and the text, or that they use like a really thick, wide brush like they do, like Urbach uses. Because I also think of another artist called Jean-Michel Basquiat.
Yes.
Who was a friend of Andy Warhol, and he lived and worked in New York.
His
paintings are very thick and bold like Urbach, but had a slight more leaning towards graffiti art.
Yes, yeah, that's very true. This particular image is very energetic, isn't it? You know, you can sense the movement, you can feel the movement. It's very much a busy sort of urban scene. You know, I'm not sure what time of day it is, but I suppose it in a city, it's always continuously moving anyway, isn't there? People chasing for a bus or a taxi or whatever it is. But there's a lot of movement, energy. It's got that fusion, hasn't it, between a representational side. You know, you've got what looks like a figure, and you've got the abstracted side as well. So, again, it's like a hybrid of both sensibilities, I think. Right, guys, we are now going to talk about the painting Julia Sleeping, which is painted in 1978, oil on board. The dimensions are 38.7 by 38.1 centimetres. Right, Lindsay, would you like to talk about this particular image?
Yes, no, I like this painting very much, actually, because in a way it's not so bold and fiery as the other works we've been talking about, although there's a strong hint of red that clashes with the green background at the top there. But it's also, at the same time, it's quite a restful image, wouldn't you say?
I think so, and what also strikes me is obviously the green and the red are complementary, aren't they? Complementary colours. But another thing that also strikes me is it's not as cluttered, again, as the other paintings. You've got the space where the profile is, where the head is leaning, and it's there's a sort of void, a space, and it's easier to read the outline, the bold outline of the form. So it's kind of less abstract, isn't it, would you say? More figurative, yeah. I think. And again, with most Albeck images, he works tirelessly, you know, building up layers, you know, scraping them away, building up again. But I'd like to say that he kind of has this final flourish where he uses quick marks to fix the image, you know, there might be gestural, but there's enough information to suggest what it is, you know. It might be abstracted, but we still know it's a face.
No, I'm interested in terms of, like, the black marks, or is it black? You know, like where the nose, the eye and the mouth is, where the chin is and the hair at the top there. When you look at those thick black brush marks along here...
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Is it actually black paint that he used, or was it that, you know, that mixed with, like, say, like the yellows, it became a slightly greenish colour? Or did he intentionally make a kind of blacky-green colour? That's what makes me curious. Because they often say that when you're at school, you shouldn't use black paint because it makes things look flat.
That's a very good point. I think there's a hint of what looks like Prussian blue. I'm not too sure. It's like a bluey black, isn't it?
Yes.
They kind of sort of merged together, really. That's a very good point. That one for me, that particular image, I feel, because of its kind of outline, it's simple to read, isn't it? It's for those that, perhaps, you know, are not familiar with this work or find it challenging, that one is more easier on the eye, isn't it, would you say?
Yes, yeah, I think one of the words I described it when I looked at it was restful. Not just because the person is sleeping,
yeah,
but because the colours are sort of more muted, actually.
And that's a very, very good point you raised. Restful, when you look at the process of the painting, it's restless. You know, there's energy, there's a vibrant, you know, the marks are vibrant, and yet he's painting somebody in a moment of stillness, in contrast to the movement of the paint. It's a great contrast, I think, you know. But it kind of works. There is a balance there. You know, you sense the person sleeping, but it's animated due to the brushstrokes.
He's an artist of hybridation, really.
Very much so.
Because, like you were saying, bringing his work together, really, you kind of have, like, abstract and representational thrown together, which creates hybrid.
Yeah.
Kind of like a hybrid idea. And in this painting that we're looking at here, you know, just like what you said, Chris, it's great. You know, I said it was restful, you said it was restless. It's really, I really like that. It's actually,
well, obviously this person's not getting any sleep.
Comment, you know.
Keeps waking up. You know.
Yeah, we better not talk anymore because we'll wake him up.
I know. Sleep on. Anyway, well, I'd like to also sort of contrast that with the drawing. Again, you know, the works on paper, the charcoal drawings. We look at the charcoal drawings, you've got this cleaner line. The line is variable. You know, you've got a thinner line, you've got a thicker line. When you look at contrast that with the painting, there isn't that much contrast with the line. It's got a thick, sort of gestural marks, but there isn't much contrast in the weight of the line.
That's true.
It's quite thick, isn't it?
Yeah, they all seem to be the same thickness, yeah. Whereas in the drawings, there's
more variety, isn't there?
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Different levels of thickness.
Right. Shall we talk about the impact of colour? Now, for example, when we did the previous podcast on Impressionism, if you remember that, we were talking about how colour has this kind of beauty attached to it, you know, how colour can attract, attract sun, sunlight and the effects of the light on certain objects, mm-hmm. and what colour, people see in these kind of effects. These guys were using colour like in ways that, emphasizing the beauty of color, they have like the sensibilities to show color in a almost color as a mysterious force. But with Auerbach, I'm not sure whether he uses it as a form of beauty for me. Okay, he uses color, but I don't think color is a number one necessity in his work. I think he uses it, but in a way that is more to do about the marks that he makes. Colour is just there, but the marks determine the energy, don't they, in the work?
Maybe it depends on the environment, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I think so.
It could be that. Maybe like the colourful works were done on a sunny day, particularly the person in Hampstead Road, High Summer 2010, that I spoke about earlier. It's the person running for a bus or a car, you don't know. In that one, it appears that it's a sunny day, like there's blue sky in the background there. It could maybe be an environmental thing.
One more question, though, Lindsay. Now, the exhibition opens with different rooms that represent different decades. You've got the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and the noughties. But I'd like to pose this question to you. I know it's a difficult question, but in each of those decades, do you think Auerbach has made significant progress? Do you think he's developed his style? And if so, how has he done that? So how would you answer that one?
In a way, you grow in the times, don't you, really? Could you say his work is better or worse? I don't think either. I think it's just kind of naturally evolved, really. You know, even those artists that don't live to a great age and die young, who's to say how their work may have turned out when they've gotten older, you know? And it's quite interesting, really. I think it's just naturally evolved.
If I'd sum
it up in two words, it's just a natural evolution, really. Yeah,
it was fascinating, wasn't it, to see his works in different decades, to see the different changes, to see his development. It's incredible. Just a privilege, really, to see it.
It is, and it's exactly, it's a privilege, and it's just inspiring to know that you can keep painting regardless of what happens in your life, whether you lose a job or whatever happens, you know, even when you retire in your 60s, you can still keep painting. That's the beauty of art, really. It's part of the soul. It's sacred, you know.
That's another point. I mean, his work is, in my opinion, it's quite emotional, wouldn't you say? It's got elements there, very sort of, it's a personal
rigorous
style.
And energetic.
Very much so. And I think people can relate to the energy of the work. I think that's what makes it contemporary, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's encapsulated the energy in a city, you know, that frenetic buzz that London has, really, you know.
Yeah.
It never sleeps. It's continuously moving. And in Auerbach's work, it has that energy. It's London in paint, isn't it, really? We touched on it earlier, the two sensibilities of painting, of the painting, rather, that, you know, is it abstract or is it figurative? I mean, I think it's both. And as you said, it's a hybrid of both. And I think,
it's fabricative. It's fabricative.
Oh, I like that. That's quite inventive. Yeah, good term. Yeah, very good term. And I think it's, I think it has elements of both. And it's a fine balance of both, though, isn't it? It's got the right tension of both. You know, it's not one or the other. But there's an image which is fixed, but it's not fixed enough to be literal in the sense that, you know, total figurative. There's looseness there that kind of ventures into the world of abstract.
Yes, that's beautifully put. I have no words left
to
describe
it. Thank you very much. That's very kind of you.
Yeah.
Well, folks, thank you so much for listening. We really, really hope you enjoyed this podcast. And please listen to our new ones in the future. We love you all. Please keep listening. And join us again for another exciting podcast of Lindsay and Lane Discuss on behalf of Passion Palette. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.